Everyone, I'm Natalie. Welcome to the Midnight Files. Today I wanted to talk about a story that came across my social media page a couple weeks ago about Rachel Malloy. It's a story that takes place in New Zealand, and there's not that much information out there about the story, unfortunately, because it took place in New Zealand and there wasn't really ever any news coverage about it. So the only information out there is by an investigative journalist called John Kemp. So I've looked into what he has said about the case, and I wanted to talk about it to bring it to the rest of the world, because he's done a 6-part series on the story of Rachel Malloy, but you can only look at that story if you are in New Zealand or if you have a VPN, I guess. So I thought I could talk about it to bring more awareness and light to the story about what really happened to Rachel Malloy. I've also damaged my camera a bit, so I don't think the quality is that good, but you'll just have to bear with me on that one today. So Rachel Malloy is a 30-year-old female who grew up in the small town of Levin in New Zealand, about a 6-hour drive south of Auckland. She later moved to Auckland, New Zealand to further her career for more opportunities. Her life was going well in Auckland and she was happy living her life. She was a gorgeous young girl with blonde hair and tattoos. She got a job in an office where everyone loved her and she was living her life. She was going on dates, sharing her life through social media like most young people do in this day and age. Rachel's mum, Mandy Malloy, says Rachel was an awesome daughter, granddaughter and friend. Said she was larger than life, beautiful inside and out, kind to a fault. Unfortunately, everything changed for Rachel in the year 2020. Rachel was living in a high-rise apartment building in the city. On the 6th of June 2020, Rachel was out the front of the foyer of her building when she was approached by a woman who looked distressed and asked her for help. Even though this was an alarming and scary situation, Rachel was a kind and caring person and just wanted to help this woman. Rachel at first offered the woman money, thinking maybe she needed some money for food or a taxi, but the lady insisted on coming inside. So Rachel took this woman up to her apartment to see how she could help her. This is when the night took a turn for the worse. The random lady Rachel had invited into her apartment with her to help her was pretending to be upset and ended up drugging Rachel. When Rachel was out of it, the woman then let 4 random other people, 3 women and 1 man, into her apartment. They helped themselves to everything in Rachel's apartment, allegedly taking clothes, makeup, electronics, her phone, robbing her of all of her possessions, really. Rachel had no idea what was going on at this stage because she was drugged with a date rape drug called G, which was a slang name used by one of the defendants on trial for the burglary. I believe the G stands for GHB, which is an illegal drug, which is a date rape drug, as it's a central nervous system depressant and it's hard to detect in any kind of drink. Like, it doesn't really taste like anything. And it's alleged that she was also sexually assaulted and raped that night when she was given the GHB. Rachel woke up in the apartment the next morning with not knowing what had happened to her after letting the lady into her house. All she knew that she was robbed and assaulted. The series of events that night were established by using CCTV footage from her apartment and admissions from the alleged offenders, amongst other things. 4 out of the 5 people were charged with property crime, which covers burglary, theft, etc., and they all pled guilty to the burglary. There were 2 CCT cameras covering 2 different angles of the front door of Rachel's apartment, showing Rachel and the woman getting out of the lift going and into her apartment. And then it shows the 4 other people getting out of the lift also going into Rachel's apartment on the CCT footage. The other four people were waiting downstairs in the lobby after the woman in the Rachel's apartment had drugged her. She went to get the other four people and then brought them up to her apartment. She went in to check Rachel was passed out, then let the other four people in. One of the four offenders who were brought up from the lobby said in the statement to police on the 6th of June 2020, "So we all went into the elevator and she said, wait outside. So we waited outside because she was going to see if her friend was up or not. And we waited outside for like 5 minutes and 5 minutes, all of us. And then she goes, come in, my friend's sleeping. My friend's sleeping. I gave her a dose. So she would have at least, she looked pretty cold out to me. So she would have at least had 7 mils." End quote. The CCTV captures them later leaving Rachel's apartment with her belongings in bags and suitcases, going in and out of her apartment with her belongings, taking more and more stuff like a conveyor belt. The CCTV then shows the four women leaving Rachel's apartment, but the fifth person, the man, stays behind after they all leave. In another statement to police about the 6th of June 2020, one of the female offenders says, so in quotes, "I just got scared and like I knew something was up. And then I asked for where the male was. And they go, oh, he's still up he's still up there. And I was like, what the fuck? You know, and then I just kind of had this dark vision of what the fuck is he going up there," end quote. Maybe I meant to say doing. The quotes themselves are actually quite hard to read out because I feel like their language is quite disjointed. And I know it sounds quite strange, but that is actually just what they actually said in the police statement. The problem is Rachel didn't know she was left alone in the apartment with this man, as she was completely knocked out from the drugs. She didn't find out about him being there alone with her until after the CCTV was reviewed. Unfortunately, by this time she was physically examined, they couldn't get much evidence of her because it was days later and she had had multiple showers, clothes washed after the alleged sexual assault, when it was too late to retrieve any kind of evidence of value. What I find strange is when they were charged with the crimes committed, it was the woman who had let them all into the apartment who was charged with the alleged sexual assault, and the man was charged with the lesser crime of burglary. So I don't quite understand that, but that's up to the police to decide, but that just sounds really strange to me because it was the man, I'm assuming, was the one who actually probably committed the alleged sexual assault because he was the one alone in the apartment with her. But then maybe something else happened in the apartment when everyone was in there. I'm not really sure why she would be charged with that and not him. Basically, when Rachel actually woke up in the morning after the crime was committed, she actually had no idea that there were all those people in her apartment. She just thought it was the one person at this stage. So when Rachel woke up, the CCTV also captures a distressed Rachel running out of her apartment into the hallway. This being extremely out of character for her, as she was hysterical, calling out for help. She had no phone as it was stolen with most of her belongings, and she is confused and extremely distressed. Her neighbor comes out of their apartment to find Rachel in the hallway and gives her his phone so she can call her friend. At this stage, she doesn't even know, like I was saying, about the five people in her apartment and what has actually happened to her. When her friend arrives, they call the police off her phone and they tell the police about the burglary. And the friend takes her to her house so Rachel can have a shower and get some sleep. Once Rachel feels a little bit better, she heads back to her apartment after she has that moment to kind of recuperate, and she asks the building's caretaker if she can view the CCTV footage. That's when she makes the horrible discovery about what really did happen to her that night, about how there was five people in her apartment and not just the one. Rachel then reports this additional information to the police about the CCT footage on the 7th of June 2020. She then got a reply back from the police in the form of a letter sent out, and the letter I find really disappointing, and you can see how Rachel was let down so many times throughout the story by the justice system, but also in this letter. This letter is filled with grammatical errors, which is, I think, really odd and embarrassing for the police. It was sent to Rachel on the 11th of June 2020, informing Rachel that the case would be closed, and the letter says, "Thank you for reporting your case to the police on the 7th of June 2020. We have unable to identify a person of interest. The CCTV for your building was of poor quality and could not provide a decent image for ID purposes. The polling of your phone and laptop does not show an address precisely enough for police to obtain a search warrant. The items could be anywhere within the blue circle, and if the building is double stoned, then this make matters worse. If you remember who it was then came into your house, please advise police and we will reopen the case. You can inform this letter to confirm that you have reported this matter to police. If you have any further information about your case or need to talk to someone about it, please contact the police using the information at the top of this letter." I'll put the letter on the screen too if you're watching this in the video, and then you can actually see how many grammatical errors there are, and I will like circle them also, like using the wrong tense, the wrong words, using a word when it should have been a plural. It's just appalling that no one checked this over before sending it out to someone who has reported a crime committed against them. Also, like, what the fuck? How would she know that random people that robbed and drugged her? Like, for one, they are people not known to her. And secondly, she didn't even know that there were five people in her flat until she saw the CCTV. It's a crime against her. Why is she expected to know them? Why are the police asking her to remember who they are as if she's going to magically remember and do their job for them? The police said the CCT footage was too grainy for them to make arrests of it, but apparently they were actually able to identify the suspects from the footage. Something just doesn't add up there. Unfortunately for Rachel, after that, she never felt the same after the horrific crime, and it changed her life forever. She never knew the extent of what really happened to her in the apartment that night, and the not knowing ate her up inside. She didn't feel like the police wanted to help her and felt like the crime was her fault, and her quality of life was severely diminished and devastated her. Rachel and her mum, Mandy, decided for her to move back in with her in Levin for support. Mandy says that Rachel confided in her a lot during this time. Mandy really began to see how debilitating this attack had been on Rachel and how it affected her in every aspect of her life. Rachel was prescribed by her doctor medications for depression and anxiety, as she wasn't coping well after the incident. Mandy felt like Rachel was prescribed too many medications for her depression and anxiety and was concerned about how many pills she was taking for that. Rachel had also turned to alcohol at this time to help her cope with her trauma. She tried counseling, but it was hard to get in to see someone. Rachel struggled with working, seeking out the truth, finding help, and coping with her trauma. Mandy pushed Rachel to make a complaint to the Independent Police Conduct Authority. 5 weeks later, Rachel made the complaint and received an apology on the 17th of July by the Independent Police Conduct Authority. It says in quotes, "Good afternoon, Rachel. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me today. I appreciate that yesterday was a big day for you and talking to me about your matter may have been difficult. As I stated in our conversation, there was miscommunication between the police, work groups that had contributed to the below standard service that you initially received. Please accept my apology on behalf of the police for the level of service you received at that time. I don't know why I always find reading out a quote really hard to read out, because I feel like people word things in a different way than I would, so then I feel like I don't always say it as clearly as I should, but hopefully I said that okay. Anyway, the case was reopened and investigation was finally underway, and there were meant to be two separate trials, one for the property crimes, which was held on the 10th of May 2022, and one for the alleged sexual assault, which was meant to be held on the 7th of June 2022. What is astonishing, just days before Rachel was found dead, Rachel was told the wrong information about the trial dates. She was told the sexual assault case was to be held on the 10th of May, which for her at that time would have been like just next week. And she didn't know who had told her it was in June. So there was a lot of emails sent back and forth, obviously, about the trial dates and everything going on. And the emails used disappointing language when they were talking about Rachel. One of them says in the email that one person should just communicate with Rachel to avoid triggering her. The thing is that she had depression, anxiety from the crime committed to her, and was anxious about being a witness to her own crime, and worrying about the offenders seeing her out in public because she didn't know what they all looked like. And two, an internal email chain that highlights the communication errors that had confused Rachel by telling her the wrong dates. The dates were finally clarified on the 2nd of May 2022, just 2 days before Rachel was found dead. So now it's 2022 in May, and Rachel had just come home, and it was 1 month before the trial, where she was to testify against the alleged ringleader in the heinous crime of the alleged sexual violation against Rachel. Rachel had moved back to Auckland as she felt she couldn't be in Levin but couldn't be back in Auckland in the same apartment, so she moved into a new apartment. Rachel had this time had 10 steps going up to her front door at her new unit, and she was found lifeless at the bottom of her steps with a traumatic head injury. She was found lying on her back with a fractured skull. According to the toxicology report at the time of her death, she had normal levels of medication in her system, and she also had an alcohol level of 4 times that of the legal driving limit. 4 times the legal limit for someone that doesn't drink often is quite high, but Rachel at this time in her life had been using alcohol as a clutch to cope. So it makes you think, was the combination enough to impair her at the time that could cause her to fall? Or was this just like a new kind of norm for her? According to paramedics who found Rachel, noted the only injury they could see on Rachel was the traumatic fatal head injury. Blunt force trauma to the back of the head. The paramedics saw no other bruises, injuries, marks on her body. She fell down 10 steps allegedly, but she had no other scrapes or cuts to her arms where you think she might try and break her fall with her arms or her legs. No bruising or marks to her back where you expect, where you might expect someone who's fallen down like 10 steps. So that in itself does seem a little bit odd to me and other people. And I think this is why Mandy, her mum, feels like maybe something else is going on here. Rachel's mum, Mandy, and her partner, Leon, were woken up on the 5th of May at 4:45 a.m. to police at their door, telling them that Rachel was in hospital and she had fallen down steps and wasn't expected to survive. Mandy and Leon had to make the terrible, sad trip to Auckland, where they flew from Wellington Airport to Auckland. She was contacted by the critical care unit in the hospital in Auckland to be safe but get there as soon as possible, as they didn't think that Rachel had much time left. It's important to point out that the police knew who Rachel was and that she was involved in an active investigation into the alleged sexual assault and property crimes. As the morning of when Rachel supposedly fell, email was sent on the 5th of May 2022 at 5:54 a.m. to a detective investigating the alleged sexual assault of Rachel. And it says, "Just letting you know that we attended an incident tonight where Rachel Malloy appears to have been drunk and fallen downstairs to her unit. She received critical head injuries and will not survive. The doctors are keeping her on life support until the family arrive from Levin. It's a very tragic set of circumstances. I see she's a victim of yours, so just giving you a heads up." End quote. Mandy got to see her daughter one last time while she was on life support in hospital. When Mandy was looking at Rachel in hospital in her bed, she thought it was strange that Rachel didn't have any bruises, scrapes, or any other marks on her. She was expecting to see the worst. She was expecting to see a battered and bruised Rachel after falling down 10 concrete steps. Mandy was given back Rachel's belongings, including her handbag. Mandy thought it was strange that Rachel's phone was not in the belongings given back to her, as she took her phone everywhere with her. As per her mum, Mandy, she said she wouldn't even go to the bathroom without her phone in hand. So she thought it was really strange that Rachel would be outside at nighttime without her phone. Unfortunately, Rachel died from her traumatic brain injury, and Mandy was informed that Rachel was for organ donation. Later that morning, on the 5th of May, the detective that received the email about Rachel's fall, who was in charge of her sexual assault case, he forwarded the email he had received that morning to two other colleagues. One at 10:27 a.m. with an attached note saying, "Just an FYI, I received this email this morning. Rachel was a complainant in an unlawful sexual connection file where she was violated by a stranger. We were set to go to trial in March. However, it got delayed by COVID and we were going to go to trial in a couple of weeks. I'm genuinely devastated by the news below. Rachel was a genuine victim and an innocent, honest person." End quote. He then forwarded the email to another colleague at 11:04 a.m. with a cover note saying, "I know you were as invested in this as me. I'm absolutely devastated at this news. Her matter was due in court at the start of the year but was delayed due to COVID. We're due back in court next month, but it appears Rachel will never get to see justice delivered for the horrible crime committed against her." So Mandy Malloy went downstairs to get a cup of tea whilst waiting for her sister to arrive at the hospital due to her flight being delayed. That's when Mandy received a call from a police officer wanting to talk to her about Rachel. Mandy went to the front of the hospital where she met a police officer and was told by the officer that they were treating her daughter's death as suspicious and a possible crime. The police said that they were taking this incident seriously as they knew about the crimes committed against Rachel. Mandy was shocked by this news and the turn of events and thought surely she just fell, but the police think it could be foul play, that she'll wait and see what becomes of it. The police officer said that a detective would be in touch with her and gave her the detective's name and number, which was sent to Mandy's phone on the 5th of May at 1:13 p.m. She was also told that forensic examination of Rachel's flat was being done as they speak. As per Mandy, she was told the detective would come to the hospital later that evening, but never showed up. It was confirmed at a later date that the number that texted Mandy's phone was a police number with a detective's details in the text message. So that was definitely real and did happen. Mandy was contacted by the critical care unit at 3:30 a.m. the morning before Rachel was donating her organs. and they said, could you please come to the hospital at 4:30 a.m. as the police want to speak with you. But the police never showed up. Mandy thought it was going to be an investigation update from the police, but it also may have been about identifying Rachel prior to donating her organs. But we can never really be sure of that because the police just never showed up. So the critical care unit were also apologizing to Rachel's family and not sure where the police were and why they hadn't arrived yet. Thank you for watching part one about Rachel Malloy. I'm going to leave it there because the next part is just as long as the first part. So I thought it might be easier to break it down into two separate sections so we can really dive into what actually happened to Rachel Malloy. I feel like the first part we can really see that, you know, Rachel was let down when she was first burgled and attacked by the, you know, the police not wanting to look into the matter further, saying if she knew the people that attacked her, please get in contact with us. They didn't take the CCTV footage as evidence as they should, and they also dismissed her, and then she had to then go and step up further to contact a higher authority in the police force in New Zealand just to get someone to take her seriously and to actually look into what happened to her. And then we see that she was then let down again by people talking about her in internal emails, confusing her about the actual dates, about the sexual assault trial, and treating her again less than favorable. And now we see that things have really taken a worse for her and she's found dead. And it's just so awful that she's gone through such a harrowing experience, so traumatic to live through that, and then pick herself up again, bring her back to Auckland and to continue on because she is a strong person and now this has happened to her. So it's just disappointing to see how victims of crimes are treated by the police, and unfortunately it doesn't get any better in part two. So I will see you next week for part two. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a great day.